Find furniture for life from Ken Michaels Furniture in Brookfield, Greenfield, or downtown Milwaukee.
Wisconsin's Afternoon News is on the air. Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios in beautiful downtown Milwaukee. Here are your hosts, Julia Fellow, and in for John McCure, it's Telly Hughes.
So much happening, Telly. So much happening in Washington, D.C. and in Wisconsin. So let's get right to it.
This is the three at three on Wisconsin's Afternoon News.
Number one, Telly, the government shutdown. Speaker Mike Johnson gave notice for congressmen and women to get to the House floor in D.C. about 3 o'clock our time, so exactly 10 minutes ago. Lots of discussion expected, and the first vote is expected to happen at about dinner time. The margins razor thin. Wisconsin's Afternoon News, Midday News, excuse me, spoke to CBS News Chief Washington Correspondent Matt Major Garrett.
So there's a two-seat margin for the Republicans after the newest member of the House, Democrat from Arizona, Adelita Grijalva, is sworn in, which will happen tomorrow. The margins are narrow. The President and the White House support this Senate compromise. There are probably five or six House Democrats who might cross over and vote for this, maybe two or three House Republicans that wander away. It appears right now is that enough votes will be there narrowly to pass it, but that's all you need is narrow passage, and it could get to the president's desk. So this could all be over midday Thursday at the latest.
So that was Major Garrett, Chief CBS News Washington correspondent, with us on Wisconsin's Afternoon News. Coming up at 3:15, we'll speak to Scott McFarland. And Jessica Tai and Greg Matzik spoke to him just minutes ago on Wisconsin's Midday News. Multiple votes forecasted for today, and ABC News believes the first vote will likely happen and go through tonight. The funding package in front of them would bring SNAP benefits, paying for public workers, air traffic control through January 30th, includes three full-year spending bills for various areas like Veterans Affairs, the Department of Agriculture. The deal guarantees a future Senate vote. And they say they promise a vote on the Affordable Care Act subsidies, meaning it's only a promise with the outcome uncertain.
So, Julie, how many votes are going to take place today? Do we know that? We're saying the first of these votes are going to take place around 5 o'clock, around dinner time. But are there going to be three of these, five of these?
I would assume at least two.
Okay.
Here we go. Now they're on the floor. They just swore in a Democratic congresswoman from Arizona. So she was not sworn in because of the government shutdown and that the House was not in session since September. The shutdown started October 1st. So I think there's going to be a lot of talking. A
lot going on.
And there's a lot. There's more than 400 congressmen and women there. So they're all going to want to speak probably before this vote. So little dog and pony show, and then we'll get to the vote. Then it will go through, and then it will go to the desk of the president. So likely tomorrow. But we'll talk more about that at 3:15. Number two, Adam Roberts.
That's right, Julia. I am in here, and I've got our second of the three at three, and it's an anniversary for the three at three number two. 20 years ago today. Do you remember where you were 20 years ago today?
Okay, I was in my freshman year of college.
Ooh.
No, senior year.
I was working in Des Moines, Iowa, as a sports reporter.
Very cool.
For the local NBC station.
Well, if you were a resident of Milwaukee's River West neighborhood 20 years ago, you were looking up at a line of power cables where a single-engine Piper PA-28 plane was hanging from its tail in a crash as pilot David Betts flew his plane into the power cables around 6:15 November 12th, 2005. We got a picture of it up right now. If you text WATCH, 855-616-1620.
Whoa.
That's what it looked like when this plane went nose first and was dangling just feet above the ground. All the news outlets were there. TMJ4 sent Jody Ambrose to the scene.
The small plane dove into a utility pole in the River West neighborhood. The plane dangled in the power lines for 2 hours. Until firefighters could rescue the pilot.
So Betts had attempted to land at Timmerman Airport that evening, but could not touch down due to a thunderstorm at the time. It was also reported later that Betts had been drinking before he took off, and he ultimately would serve 6 months in jail for OWI. Pioneer Press reported a few years later he had been arrested again with another OWI, one of 10 charges he'd received. as of 2010. And miraculously, guys, no one injured in that crash.
He keeps having these OWIs, and you keep your license?
Your pilot's license?
Apparently so.
What? Okay, text WATCH to 855-616-1620. WATCH to our Setting Limited Talk and Text Line. 20-year anniversary of that. It looks completely vertical, like it would have...
Yeah.
Wasn't for those
just
those
a few
wires.
Cables from it hitting face down. Yeah.
Yeah. Nose
wow.
down. All right. Number three, La Crosse hosted a very unique basketball event Monday night. The La Crosse Granny basketball team. It's made up of players of women at least 50 years old or older. They played against eighth grade girls at the Holman's Boys and Girls Club. So these. This is our partners at WISC. They caught up with Addie Jenke.
It's just really fun because it's something that we don't usually get to do. The rules, like, no jumping or running. I've been caught myself almost running or almost jumping. I'm like, oh, gotta fix that. Just, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, they were using rules from the 1920s. And guess what? The Grannies won by 2 points.
Those eighth graders are going to remain anonymous for a long time.
Grannies are dressed up so fun, like little sailor outfits too. 3:15 on WTMJ. W helps get you home next. Wisconsin's Afternoon News Podcast is sponsored by Dave Dray Camp Heating. Your comfort is their family tradition. Visit DaveDrayCamp.com. Day 43, Telly, of the government shutdown. Already breaking the record for the longest government shutdown in history, Speaker Mike Johnson gave notice for congressmen and women to get to the House floor at 3 o'clock. We're 20 minutes in, and this is what we see right now. We see Adelita Grijalva. She was just sworn in. So she's a Democrat from Arizona. They're letting her speak after she was sworn in. Then a lot more speakers. A lot of discussion expected. The first vote with the House is expected to happen at about dinner time. Republicans have a razor-thin majority. Look for that magic number, 218, for it to pass. CBS News congressional correspondent Scott McFarland was on Wisconsin's Midday News.
I mean, this is going to end tonight, probably after dinner time. They never do anything on schedule here, so they say they want to vote by about 7 p.m. Therefore, you know it's not going to happen at 7 p.m. But before the night's over, they're going to narrowly pass this thing through the U.S. House. The president says he will sign it as soon as it's done, run it over to the White House. I think we'll wake up tomorrow to a reopened government. And the politics of that really should be secondary to the real-life implications. You can't have this hellstorm at the airport this close to Thanksgiving. And to be clear, it's not going to ramp all the way back up to full stability immediately. And you can't have all these federal workers going for a sixth week without paychecks. This is just not tenable. Vote's going to be very tight. They will not start the vote. They will not allow the vote to open until they have enough people to pass it. So if there's a late head count, this thing, it could slide to tomorrow. I don't expect that, though. They were notified, Joe, to get moving. That notwithstanding, it's just stupid that we're in this position to begin with, that we're this deep into a shutdown. To a degree, it's a dereliction of duty. You didn't have to wait to the last second to get people in town. I mean, you could have people on standby ready right off the House floor for the possibility of a vote so as not to have any issues with logistics and getting people back into town. There was nothing keeping the Congress members away from Washington during a shutdown. The Senate's here. So some of this is a self-inflicted wound. It didn't have to happen. It's just we've already leaned this hard on federal workers. We've already leaned this hard on air travelers. We've already leaned this hard on people who need federal services. To not have everybody here already was a self-induced wound.
So what are we voting on tonight? It's a funding package in front of the House. It would bring SNAP benefits back, funded through September, okay? It would pay public workers like air traffic control through January 30th. So September would be SNAP. It would be funded through air traffic control through January. It includes 3 full-year spending bills to boot with various areas like Veterans Affairs and the Department of Agriculture. And the deal guarantees a future Senate vote on Affordable Care Act subsidies, meaning the only thing is a promise for a vote. The outcome of that in the Senate is uncertain. So the House had not been in session since late September. So that's why after Speaker Johnson gave notice, They had the 36 hours to get to the floor, including Wisconsin Republican Congressman Derek Van Orden, who posted this. You know what that sound is?
Yeah.
What? It's a Harley.
I
was trying to help you out, too. Sorry, guys. That's so funny. Well, I thought that it was pretty interesting. He was posting how he drove for 16 hours on his Harley, 951.8 miles, because he wanted to avoid potential flight issues. So Congress cannot fly private, if you didn't know that. They have to fly commercial. So what was interesting was that Jessica Tai asked, what about Zoom, to Scott McFarland with CBS News?
COVID, and it did not go well. They called it proxy voting, where you could give your vote to a colleague and he or she could go to the floor and read it out loud for you. We did that for social distancing and for COVID protocols. It made a lot of sense at the peak of the crisis. Problem was, like so many special privileges, they get abused.
So just in case you're wondering, why didn't as soon as the Senate on Friday passed that, there you go. They overused it and abused it.
Yeah.
And so they have to come in person.
Julie, I'll be very frank with this. I have a problem with, you've been shut down for over 40 days, and air traffic controllers have had to go without two paychecks. And you're not even going to discuss back pay. You're only going to say you're paying them until January 30th. Mm-hmm. So it's basically 60 days, and then we're going to be right back where we are if they can't figure anything out?
Yeah, exactly. So it will include the last two paychecks, and then for air traffic control, they're guaranteed to have a paycheck after that, if this gets passed.
If this gets passed.
And then once it goes to the president's desk, so we're going to have Groundhog's Day all over again January 30th, yes.
Yeah, I don't understand that. And I think that if you're going to hold out this long, if you're the Democrats, you're going to hold out this long, get everything that you want. It seems like this is just 20 something days overdue, because this is the same bill that the Republicans have been proposing pretty much the entire time. They haven't done anything that was different. And the only thing that they got was a promise to vote on the Affordable Care. They're not saying that they're going to make any bills or any motions or anything. It's just a promise meeting. And people have had to literally go without paychecks and food, like SNAP recipients and things of that nature, and it's all because of the politics.
The most crucial thing. John and I said last week, or whenever this government the government shutdown's been going on for so many weeks now, whichever week it was, we're like, why don't we just have them stay in that building, stay at the Capitol until they make a decision? How are they allowed to go back to their
Yes. And on top of that, if you really want to get things done, when the government is shut down, they shouldn't be able to get paid. And I'm sure
they didn't get paid.
Yeah. And Debbie, we both know if they're not getting paid, I'm sure something would have gotten done well before now.
No kidding.
They're part of the government, right? I mean,
right.
That's
so why are they exempt?
So if the government is shut down, how are they getting paid?
Okay. So it's part of one of the statutes that they passed a long, long time ago. But
well, isn't that handy?
Yes, of course they did.
Exactly.
But the military is not exempt. If it wasn't for the Pentagon moving funds around, with the Department of War, now it's called, mm-hmm. the Department of War, moving it around, then the military would not be getting paid right now, too. And some of them are serving overseas.
Yeah. And
as we speak.
Yeah. So during the shutdown, it was only the troops and one other entity that were getting paid. But everyone else is like, well, we got to get this figured out. And you just can't say, oh, well, when you're talking about people's livelihoods.
I know.
And so you have people going hungry. Over 700,000 in just the state of Wisconsin received SNAP. Right. Benefits. So we're not even talking about the other states and how many people in totality has been affected by SNAP benefits being frozen.
Exactly. Hear, hear. All right. We're going to have all of your top stories. You know what our top story is going to be. And your weather brought to you by Sweet Talks Med Spa Self-Love. Julia Fellow here alongside Telly Hughes. John will be back tomorrow to talk all about his grandbaby boy that he just visited in New York. Hopefully there's no flight issues. It'll be great, though. But we wanted to talk to WTMJ's Adam Roberts. He's going to be talking about a Republican gubernatorial candidate proposing sweeping changes to the Wisconsin election process. Adam.
Yeah, this is Washington County Executive Josh Shulman, one of technically three Republicans currently in the race. There's a far-off third candidate that, I'm going to be honest, the name is escaping me at the moment, but also Tom Tiffany, the former congressman from northern Wisconsin. So Shulman has authored this four-point proposal, which I spoke with him about earlier today. And the key, there's four, like I said, there's four key points. The main one that sticks out is the abolishment of the body known as the Wisconsin Elections Commission, which has the responsibility of doling out the governing of election law in our state. And in its place would be an elected official that would be voted on by the people. Shulman speaking with me earlier.
In the United States, we're always better off having things in the hands of elected officials with good, competent public servants helping to administer. And right now we have a system where there is no accountable elected official involved at all. In fact, when elected officials are asked, even at the state level, they kind of point fingers to administrators and appointed officials, and it just doesn't work.
So the way the system works right now is that the governor and state legislative leaders have the ability to appoint members of the body, of which the administrator is Megan Wolf, and there are several others. I believe it's a six-member body that votes on matters, so you could have things that end in a 3-3 tie, the way that it's set up right now. Also included in this proposal by Shulman would be the prohibition of the use of so-called central count locations. We have one not too far from where we're seated right here. It was at the Baird Center, I believe, for the 2024 election. Instead, Shulman says that election clerks would have the ability to process ballots the day before election day. We've heard a lot about the late night election, so-called election ballot dump, when ballots come in at 1, 2, 3 o'clock in the morning, and we don't get results often for state and national elections until super early the day after election day. This is a way to try to work around that. Also included in the proposal would be the moving of statewide elections, all of them, to fall. So right now we have elections for state Supreme Court and the state superintendent of public instruction that are held in spring. This would move all of those, both of those, to fall. Shulman cites low voter turnout for the spring elections. So it would move all of that under one umbrella. Now, obviously, this is going to require so much to happen. Number one, he's got to be elected governor. Which none of this happens if unless
Step
he's not
number
elected.
One, get elected right. governor.
That's very important. Number two, moving all those elections would require a constitutional amendment in Wisconsin, which is its whole process in and of itself. And then the third thing I brought up with Shulman is that, as we've seen, anytime there's movement with election law, there's going to be legal pushback. Think about the state Supreme Court and its current liberal majority.
It seems like lawfare is now the way forward, aside from the politics. So certainly we'll anticipate that moving forward. I fully anticipate that we will have county clerks from places that are not conservative who sit at the table and help inform what the reform looks like.
And we've seen matters like this before, particularly from GOP governor's candidates. Think Rebecca Clefish and Kevin Nicholson in 2022. They both offered mirrored proposals to this one. So we've seen it before under the premise of protecting election integrity. This is just the newest version of that move.
Wow.
I just, yeah. First off, like you said, before we put the cart before the horse, let's just get elected first and then, because what you were saying is going to take a whole lot for them to have even more power. That's what it seemed like, because the comment that he said early on really struck me when he said that, yeah, the decisions will be put back in the lawmakers that you elected, but elected officials don't always have the right or the best answer at times. So you want to put more power in their hands, and I don't know.
More influence.
Yeah,
okay.
To me, I don't know. But
it's interesting, because when I was going over the Marquette Law poll that came out, I believe it was late last month, as far as when you look at gubernatorial candidates and you're a voter, who do you recognize and who do you really not know anything about? Showman pulled really high, like in the 80s, in terms of people who said, I don't know enough about this person to make a decision on whether I'd vote one way or another. And that's often due in part because policy issues aren't very clearly stated. And this would seem to be a move to try to get that number a little bit down by making it clear where he stands compared to someone like a Tom Tiffany on election integrity. And I know that Tiffany will likely respond to this measure in his own way.
WTMJ's Adam Roberts, thank you so much.
You bet.
Coming up, a powerful community event aiming to break the stigma around mental health. Next. 3:48 on WTMJ. I want to share something really special. Coming up, a powerful night of courage and connection. The Friendship Circle of Wisconsin and RedGen are bringing the community together for the 2025 One Thing I Wish You Knew event, where local teens open up their hearts. They share raw, inspiring stories about their mental health journeys to spark understanding, hope, healing, and end any stigma. You can be part of that conversation and go there. It's happening November 23rd, so Sunday, November 23rd of this month. Text FRIENDSHIP to 855-616-1620. FRIENDSHIP to our setting limited talk and text line, 855-616-1620. I talked to two young women, incredible. Mendy, 16 years old. She was a teen speaker with One Thing I Wish You Knew last year. And I also spoke to Gabriella, right to her left. She's 17 years old, and she'll be speaking at One Thing I Wish You Knew coming up November 23rd. Here's our conversation. How did you become connected to this?
I am a teen leader on the teen leadership board at Friendship Circle, and I heard about the event when I was helping out the board last year, and I really wanted to help out because I had an experience that I thought could really resonate with a big audience.
Can you share it with us?
I have had mental health struggles throughout my life. I have had family struggles, but also loss, but also 2 years ago, I tore my ACL. And my speeches focused a lot about athletes' mental health after an injury and how important it is to like recognize, but also how important and possible it is to bounce back stronger from that.
Thank you for sharing that. That's incredible because Tucker Kraft, he just tore his ACL. And we have on Green and Gold Insiders, Brian Bulaga, he tore both of his ACLs as he was a Packer. And Mark Tauscher, he tore one of his ACLs during a game and then he had to limp up steps. So he was talking about that. And the mental part of it is that you don't feel like you're part of the team anymore, but you're there. It's hard to come back from that type of injury.
Yeah, it's definitely a roller coaster for me. I managed my soccer team after I got injured from soccer. So it was kind of a terrifying thing to watch because I knew that if any of my teammates landed the wrong way, they could be in the exact same spot I was. So it was kind of like a protective kind of moment for those people. But also I was so jealous all the time. And if someone was like, oh, I don't want to go to practice today, it was just like, I wish I could go to one more practice. And it was just a crazy feeling to try to deal with because while I wanted to be on the team, it also hurt to be part of the team in the way that I was part of. And I always thought that being on a team meant you're playing on the team, but it's actually being on a team is part of your identity and like who you are. And it's kind of weird to struggle with that when it's kind of taken away from you in the way you're used to it.
So how's your ACL now?
It's stronger than it was. I actually came back and cleared the day of my tennis tryout last year. And I ended up this year, like getting first all conference for tennis. And I played soccer last year. I tried out. I was terrified, but it was the best decision I've ever made. And I've just gotten a lot stronger from that. I'm still afraid every single day that it could tear from anything. But also I stop thinking about it as much. And every time that someone else is injured, I just know what they might be feeling and I know how to help them.
Tell me about last year and being on the panel.
Oh, wow. It was really an amazing experience. The year before, my good friend, she was one of the teen speakers and she really advised me to be a part of it. I was a freshman when she first advised me and I was like, you know what? Why not? What's stopping me from doing this? And going through the process of being a part of the event was really a wonderful experience. And it all culminated in that night when we had the actual speech. And I think that the panel, like you mentioned, was a very important part of it for me because me and the three other teen speakers, we had spent months preparing and figuring out exactly what we wanted to say and what we wanted to convey. And then you're on this panel and there are people just in the audience, you've never met them before, and they're asking you questions. And it's like, you can't prepare for that. You can have an idea of what you want to say, what you want to get across, but you never know what question is going to be asked. And everything gets so much more raw and so much more like real and emotional. And being on the panel for that part, it wasn't that I was a person giving a speech to these people. I was having a conversation with people that needed to hear what I had to say.
What did you share?
My speech was about my experience growing up with a lot of grief and mental health struggles. My sister passed away when I was 3 years old, and I sort of had that like storm cloud looming over me for a lot of my life. It was hard to really deal with it because it happened when I was so young. It was hard to really figure out the words, figure out what I wanted to say, and really just identify how I was feeling. And I think a lot of children, that gets covered up for them. That gets pushed aside because it's hard to say what you're feeling when you don't know what the words are and you don't know what you're feeling. And that grief manifested in a lot of different anxiety disorders and depression. And it sort of like followed me throughout my life. And I talked about that a lot of my speech. And I think I didn't really deal with it until I had to deal with it. And I said, oh, I would love to write this speech and I'd love to come on here and talk about my grief and my experience. And I didn't realize what I was doing, but I was working through it for the first time in my life. And being able to share these stories and share these experiences, not only are they for the benefit of others, but they're also for the benefit of yourself to really get through it, write it down, talk it out, and figure out what you want to say.
Do you feel like you're making a difference or is it helping you?
I think it's helped me a lot. And I think it's helped me a lot, including the fact that I'm helping others, that there are people out there that learn and grow because of what I say. Because I can deal with what I went through and because I'm talking about it, it helps them figure out their path.
We just had our practice speech night a few days ago, and I related to every single one. No matter how different their experiences were, there was this one feeling that we all had and like one shared experience that we all had. And we were all so supportive of each other. And I think, yeah, they're really helping us. We're helping each other just push through that one block that we haven't gotten over. And for me personally, that's talking about how I feel.
There's no stigma. We want you to be good. We want you to be happy and live a full life. So why do you think people should go on Sunday, November 23rd?
I think you should go because you never know what it can awaken inside of you. You never know what it may remind you. Even like Gabby was saying, hearing the other teen speakers talking of their stories, it's like there's always something that I can relate to. And there's always something that's like, oh, yeah, I went through that too. Or, oh, yeah, I feel the same way. Thank you for putting it out there. Because there are so many parts of us that may not be buried, but we may not realize are there. And the event really throws a lot of that in the open.
I think that the event meets you where you're at, and there's something there for you depending on what you're struggling with. Like, there's mental health professionals there. There's like other programs that are there, but there's also a lot of people there. I think that we think about the speakers, but I think there's also all the people there that are all there to learn or experience something similar, and we're all there for like mental health and mental health awareness. And I think that there's just a community there that we all feel kind of alone sometimes when we're going through it, but we have all these people in one space for one reason, and I think that's just a really good thing to be at.
I think this would help a lot of people no matter how old they are, because you might see a coworker or a classmate or a teacher or something and they're acting irritated with you. Well, they may have just stubbed their toe.
Mm-hmm.
They may have just gotten a bad lab result, or it's an anniversary of sorrow. So does this give you a lot of perspective of where people might be at?
Yeah, I think we're here to break the stigma. And part of the stigma is making sure that we can empathize with everybody and that we can see what everybody is going through. You know, your emotions or your experiences or your trauma may not justify everything you do, but it's extremely important to give everybody grace. No matter the situation, you have to understand where they're at. And events like this really help remember that.
Yeah, I definitely think that you see people speaking, and as an audience member, they are your voice until you find yours. And I think that There's no harm in going, and it does find your voice for you. And me personally, for all 17 years of my life, I'm not one to say how I feel at all. So I think that telling people how I feel, this isn't the first time that I'm really going out there and saying, this is how I feel and this is how I'm doing now after saying all of these things. And I think that people are very similar to me in that way, where they kind of just close off. And I do mention like being a turtle in my own shell in my speech, and I'm a writer myself, so I do share a lot of my feelings in my writing, and I'm just finally like letting that all out.
Oof.
It's gonna be really good for me and really good for my audience to hear.
Wow. The last girl you just heard, that was Gabriella, 17 years old, and right next to her, Mendy, 16. Boy, are they wise. So if you text friendship to 855-616-1620, friendship to our setting unlimited talk and text line, it'll take you right to the landing page to save the date. One Thing I Wish You Knew, 2025, Sunday, November 23rd. It's happening at the Italian Community Center. Really easy parking. I am part of the board of directors of the Friendship Circle of Wisconsin. They're a part of this. They're partnering with Red Gen. So please RSVP. You can text friendship to 855-616-1620.